popular science radio. Headlines, extreme science, gadgets, green tech, military tech, odd inventions, medicine. Popular science radio with your host, Alan Taylor.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. Gosh, I don't know about you, but I have been getting hit with every kind of fraudulent weirdness on Facebook, on emails. My spam filter is it's like it caught on fire. I had to take a fire extinguisher to it. It's crazy, this identity theft problem. I got a request on Facebook from my dad the other day. What do you mean? What, did you unfriend me and you're deciding to friend me back again? So I accepted. And then I was thinking about it about an hour later. I went, wait a minute. I just saw a post from my dad yesterday. My dad's 88 years old and he's into the, you know, all of the social media stuff, which is good. He's still in business, believe it or not. But I went back to look and I went, you know, I thought it was kind of odd that there was no photo of him. And I looked and I put my dad's name in. Boom, there's my dad. I go back and I do a search and there's two of my dad. The other one, who my son and four or five friends had already accepted the friend request, this was a fraudulent dad. Well, that's what's going on in the world. There's a lot of identity theft, counterfeiting, all kinds of cyber attacks going on. I have a friend who is in the cyber attack business. You know, he helps countries to not be attacked through the internet. It's a big problem. We are being attacked, bombarded daily. So I was in the airplane the other day reading a story about this company, VerifyMe. And I looked at this and I went, you know, this is interesting. They're a pioneer in combining patented physical, cyber, and biometric security solutions to prevent identity theft and counterfeiting and fraud. So, I mean, and if you think about it, people, you can buy stuff that is counterfeited, like, okay, purses. If you go to New York, watches, purses, everything you buy off the street vendors is all counterfeit. You already know that. And you're kind of like, I don't care. It's 10 bucks for a, you know, a Rolex watch. It works an hour and then it's done. But it's the problem that is, it could be medicine. That's a life or death situation. It could be auto parts like airbags and brakes. Again, counterfeit, life and death. So we reached out to VerifyMe, and you can check them out at verifyme.com. We got the CEO. His name is Paul Donfried, and he is not only the CEO, but he's a director of the board of directors, which oversees all strategic and operational aspects of the entire business worldwide. And I looked a little deeper, and I see that at one point his prior role was CTO, over at Verizon for identity and access management, and his responsibilities were insane. This guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to identity theft and everything else, counterfeiting and fraud. So, Paul, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. Am I kind of hitting the nail on the head here of what VerifyMe kind of helps people with?
Absolutely, Alan. Spot on.
So, VerifyMe's been around since 1999, which is, you know, I mean, things have continued to evolve in the world of the crooks, you might say, and they're getting smarter and smarter all the time with digital fraud, cyber fraud. Forget about all the normal fraud stuff that, you know, the purses and watches and things that we buy when we all visit Manhattan. And I'm guilty as anybody else. I went, hell, if I go to my next meeting, I'm going to have that really cool Rolex on until it stopped working before I even got home. There's a problem here because, you know, as we buy these silly things, we're actually feeding those thieves and empowering them to come back after us. So the first thing we got to know is stop buying that fraudulent garbage from those vendors. And, you know, work hard, save your money, and buy the real thing, which I have yet to buy a real Rolex. But let's start with the digital part of this. I mean, we're all getting hacked constantly. We're getting all these emails from God knows where. So talk about for a moment, and we'll take a break after that, but talk about VerifyMe and what you guys do. Give me a minute on that.
Sure. So what we do is try and ensure that human beings can have confidence in the physical goods that they're dealing with or the other human beings that they're dealing with. And on the digital side, you know, you mentioned your Facebook story with your dad. The inherent problem there is we're still using passwords and PINs to try and authenticate human beings.
Mm.
And there's no direct connection between a password and a PIN and you. Mm. It's a directory entry.
Right.
So anybody that can hack it or compromise it can masquerade as you.
So the biometric part of it, where fingerprints,
exactly. What
eyeballs.
What we focus on is integrating biometrics,
right,
which have a direct connection to you. They can't be stolen. Nobody can masquerade them. And we incorporate something called liveness detection, right? So for facial recognition, right? Somebody can't hold a picture of you up to the camera.
Right. Hold on. This is exactly what we all need to know. Everybody's been hacked, whether it was on your Facebook or your Twitter account, or just getting emails from God knows who, invoices from, I've even gotten invoices from myself before. I'm like, I'm not paying my own bill. I'm too much. We'll take a break. We're talking a little bit here about identity theft, counterfeiting, and all that type of stuff that goes along with it, and medicine. We're going to get into all that. Paul's going to stay with us from verifyme.com. We're going to be here to the bottom of the hour, so get ready to learn and be safe. This is Popular Science Radio. Introducing the Craftsman Bolt-On Reciprocating Saw. This saw attachment comes with a 6-inch general-purpose blade and delivers enough power to cut through a variety of materials like drywall, PVC, and even small tree branches. The reciprocating saw attachment transforms the bolt-on base into a portable and versatile cutting beast. Tool-free blade changes make switching out accessory blades easier than ever. Construct your Craftsman Bolt-On system today. Craftsman, made to make. Available at Craftsman.com, Sears, Sears.com, Sears Hometown, and Sears Hardware Stores. Well, you're listening to Popular Science Radio. I'm Alan Taylor, our show brought to you in part by Craftsman, America's most trusted tool brand. And those bad boys out there are going to try and get your identity. They're going to sell you some fraudulent piece of junk and tell you it's the real thing. And listen, when you're buying a medicine, that's life and death. When you're buying parts for your car, airbags and brakes and things like that. Again, life and death. It's not just the tchotchkes that we buy that we don't really care so much about. From VerifyMe, we have the CEO, Paul Donfried, with us. And we were talking a little bit about how to verify me with my fingerprint, biometrics, or face recognition technology. But Paul, coming back in, you were talking a little bit about biometrics, and am I going to have to, prick my finger and get blood on my keyboard, or, biometrics? A lot of people don't even know what that is. Maybe you could start there.
Sure. So biometrics are unique characteristics to a human being, right? The geometry of your face, the fingerprints and the ligatures on your finger, right? There are things that are specific to you and are very difficult to reproduce. And to answer your question, no. We're past the days where you have to drip blood on your keyboard or something like that. And the principal change there is a smartphone. All right, so we leverage smartphones and tablets. We take advantage of their inherent capabilities. Everybody, your kids, my kids, doing selfies every day.
Well, and I use my thumbprint and my fingerprint, of which was very easy, and for a moment we'll stay with the iPhone. Anybody that has an iPhone, the later model ones, you use your thumbprint to wake it up and open it up without having to put the 1234 code in, whatever it might be. So that answers that question. It's as easy as letting your device with the iPhone recognize your thumbprint, which is almost a scan device, right? I mean, ultimately,
exactly. You leverage those capabilities.
Yep. So talk about, and again, keep going on the facial recognition. I mean, that, again, is another. That's how, if you watch, same thing with the selfies. When I do a Facebook post, it automatically recognizes my face and it says, do you want to, tag yourself? And it recognizes all my friends that I spend the most time with. And I've always wondered how that is, but it's facial recognition, right?
Absolutely. No, so, it's absolutely facial recognition. Yeah. And it's really become ubiquitous, right? And the IoT of things, the Internet of Things that we hear about, is really how do you leverage all these sensors that now exist on smartphones, in buildings, and facial recognition is one dimension of how you can leverage that.
So how,
and it allows you to have confidence in who you're collaborating with and vice versa.
Right. And how does VerifyMe use these then in whatever it is you guys do, which I really want to get into?
So our key patents are in the area of a risk scoring system. Mm. We really don't care what the individual authentication mechanism is. So whether it's your fingerprint on an iPhone, your fingerprint on an Android, facial recognition, voice recognition, a retina scan, we don't care. And our system can support any of those mechanisms. And the idea is to take advantage of what's convenient for the user. So, for instance, Alan, if you're skiing and you've got on goggles and gloves, facial recognition, fingerprint recognition are not going to be convenient.
Right.
Voice recognition, maybe.
Ah.
Right? If you're in the opera and you want to check your email, voice recognition isn't going to be. It's probably too dark to do facial recognition, so your fingerprint may work great.
Right.
Right? So our philosophy is let the user pick what's convenient and make sense for the given transaction.
So when it comes to Verify Me, and do I join? Explain the Verify Me world now.
So no, we have a platform, and we sell our platform to what we refer to as relying parties, the people who are interested in knowing who you are.
Mm.
That could be your bank because they want to give you access to move money in your account.
Mm.
It could be your healthcare provider because they want to deliver services to you or a prescription, and they need to know exactly who you are.
So generally,
you would use your existing services, but as they move beyond a password or a PIN, you'll start seeing things like Verify Me become ubiquitous.
All right. Hang tight. I want to learn a little bit more about this because there's so much to learn, and I want to get into the auto parts, you know, the counterfeit goods, and how do you know that you're buying the right stuff? And this is all very, very, very important, whether it is the medicine or just the airbags for your cars. I mean, we've all watched all the recalls. We're talking with the CEO of Verify Me. You're listening to Popular Science Radio, brought to you by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. We'll be right back.
You were eight and you had bad traits. You go to school and learn the golden rule. So why are you acting like a bloody fool? If you get hot, then you must get
on the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet, the new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Well, you're listening to Popular Science Radio. I'm Alan Taylor, our show brought to you in part by Bridgestone, and they're passionate about making tires that you can count on to perform when it matters most. Bridgestone Tires. So are you getting really angry about all this identity theft that you're watching happen? You see it, you know, all the time. Friends are getting screwed, basically, because of identity theft. And then, you know, what about counterfeit goods? Cyber fraud is going crazy, but then there's also the goods that we buy. And I've said it a couple of times, and we're going to talk about it now, but if I buy counterfeit medicine, yeah, it's life or death, and I'm going to be one pissed off Jose. The problem is, I can't find anybody to be pissed off at. I just, you know, either feel like I just got screwed, raped, I don't know, what does it feel like? I don't want to know. And if I get into a crash and my airbag goes off and I bought, you know, an airbag from somebody and it was counterfeit and it doesn't work, you know, I got nobody to complain to. As it is, there's enough problems with the good airbags, as we're seeing with all these recalls. It was the year of the bad airbag last year, 2015. So we have the CEO, Paul Donfried, over at Verify Me. They've been around since 1999. And Paul spent a number of years at Verizon as the chief technology officer, identity and access management for Verizon, and a whole bunch more. Your information, by the way, I got on you is you've been doing this for 25 years, so you have grown up in the world of identity theft and fraud. But I want to talk about this whole thing, you know, with medicine, fraudulent medicine, that's scary to me, and bad airbags, and I've said it enough time. And then we'll come into this relationship you now have with HP and what this alliance is going to mean for people. But what do you do when you buy medicine and find out or don't find out that it's, you know, counterfeit?
Well, so you're right, Alan. It is a really scary problem, right? And it is life or death. And so for that reason, there's a lot of people like myself who focus energy and resource on solving those problems. And the way you do it is really not that hard. You combine physical security with digital security, and you constantly innovate and improve so they stay a couple steps ahead of the counterfeit.
So when you talk about you at that moment in time, is it the pharmaceutical manufacturer, the airbag manufacturer that is the you you're talking about so that my stuff can't get ripped off? Or are you talking about the consumer? I want to differentiate there.
I'm talking about both because it impacts both the brand owner,
yeah,
right, Fram Auto Parts or Pfizer or Merck, but it also impacts their customer,
right?
Right. So if you're the recipient of the counterfeit airbag, the next crash you get in, you're going to die because it's not going to work.
Right.
If you're the patient who's using a counterfeit medicine, you're going to die because you're not getting the active ingredient you need to combat your disease. Right. So it clearly impacts the end user. But it also presents tremendous liability to the brand owner. Because if your relative died because the airbag didn't deploy, who are you going to sue?
Right.
You're going to sue whoever you think manufactured that airbag.
Well, and the same with identity theft. In other words,
absolutely.
If somebody goes out and buys or gets a loan to buy a house, never even buys a house, just gets the loan and takes the money and runs, I may be responsible for that. So in that same vein, I'm hearing you now. Okay.
Well, and when you were on your plane and you read the article, you were very perceptive because at the heart, these are exactly the same problem. Physical anti-counterfeiting and identity theft, they are both identity and authentication challenges.
Right. So the question I guess I have now, let's talk about your new partnership with HP and give some details on that alliance and how that's going to help people and companies.
So it helps people because it brings this combination of physical security and digital security to the next level. And so historically, printing, imagine the huge printing presses you see spitting out newspapers, right? The way all traditional presses worked, you had to build a plate. The plate defined what was put down on the substrate, and you then ran off 10 million copies of it. And each was identical. With HP's Indigo line of digital printers, that's no longer the case. Mm. Because it's a digital printer, every single impression can be different. It's what they refer to as variable data. So we can now take our physical anti-counterfeiting pigments and we can combine them with changes to what we actually print on every package and make it unique. And in the case of medicines, as an example, that means now each medicine can have a barcode or a QR code that's got an individual serial number.
Yeah.
We can combine that with our security pigments that allow you, the end user, to use a smartphone or a fluorescent light to say, yep, I know this is authentic because the pigment changes color and I can see it.
So here's what I'm getting, all right? I've been writing down some notes, and it looks like you are replacing passwords and pins, which we all use, and I've never really felt very comfortable with that, with perhaps user-friendly multi-factor authentication is what I'm looking on your website a little bit, and this stuff is intuitive. So it authenticates live user identity with biometrics. And do you guys use GPS and stuff like that to make sure that, you know, if I'm in California 1 hour and an hour later I'm in India, you know that something's wrong?
Absolutely. That's called the geo-velocity problem.
See, I mean, this is what I'm getting out of this, to protect consumers' privacy and integrity of a brand. And that's what it boils down to, because if you have a brand out there, you folks that are in business, you better make sure that you're using something like VerifyMe. And as a consumer, I mean, can consumers interact with VerifyMe, or is it mainly the brands that you're trying to speak to?
No, absolutely. So we have what's called a overt anti-counterfeiting feature. Mm. It's visible, and you can see a color change when you view the object under fluorescent light from any other kind of light. Under fluorescent light, it's pink.
Nice.
Under other lights, it's beige.
All right, Paul.
If you can detect that color change, you know it's authentic.
So the website is verifyme.com. It's just scary, ugly stuff we have to deal with in our lives, people. Paul Donfried, CEO of VerifyMe, thank you, brother. I get it now. It took me a little while. Got kind of a small, shrunken brain from all the, you know, soda I've been drinking with aspartame. Paul, thank you very much, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan. You have a great day.
All right. It's Popular Science, and we'll be back with more right after this. If the measure of a car was how many people it turned into people who love cars, the Subaru Outback would be worth its weight in gold, thanks largely to its symmetrical all-wheel drive. Unlike other systems that wait for a wheel to slip, it powers all four wheels all the time, all while with better fuel economy than midsize SUVs. And the fact that the Outback is made in a zero landfill plant doesn't hurt either. It's a car that is truly built to be loved. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. It's nothing to laugh about. Fraud, cyber, you know, all that stuff, identity theft, scary. You're listening to Popular Science Radio. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Subaru. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. I'm a car guy. Love cars. So our next guest, very, very interesting guest. Not that Paul from Verify Me wasn't, but, I mean, this is a very complicated topic we're talking about today. Identity fraud and physical fraud, counterfeit goods and all that. But the one thing that scares me lately more than anything, believe it or not, is when I'm at the grower's market buying some, you know, apples or God knows what my wife wants to buy, and person whips out their phone and wants me to swipe my credit card on their phone. I don't know this person. I don't know where that information's going. It could be going all the way across the world, and the next thing you know, I'm buying swampland in Florida. I was just in Florida, by the way. I was right near the Kennedy Space Center, Cocoa Beach. I was at West Palm Beach for a couple days, and I went to Orlando, and I really wanted to go to the Kennedy Space Center. Guess what? Our next guest, his name is Darren Beyer. He is a former NASA space shuttle engineer and an author, but he's also an expert in mobile technology and payments, exactly what I was talking about. So, you know, Darren, my fear, is it something to be afraid of when somebody swipes my credit card on the little square that's on the top of their phone? And then I want to talk about your book that just came out, too. But let's start there since we're going talking about fraud and everything.
Yeah, well, it is, you know, and one of the fraud vehicles that people use these days is they'll get a hold of a credit card number. And then they'll go into one of these stores and buy a gift card that's a Visa gift card, and then they change the magnetic stripe to match the number that they stole, and voila, they have a card that they can go take into a store and spend. And so, you know, when you give your card over to anybody that swipes it in at a device, they could be skimming that number off and putting it on a list out there somewhere for somebody to buy and do bad things with.
Well, how do you, first of all, how do you go from being a NASA space shuttle engineer, and I see here that you were hired by NASA at Kennedy Space Center, where I was just near there the other day, and you worked as a space shuttle experiment engineer for nearly 10 years, and you actually worked on the Hubble launch, and then you had the honor of working on board every space shuttle orbiter except Challenger. I mean, and you also know and are an expert in mobile technology and payments. Dude, I mean, you're an animal, first of all.
Well, you know, I'm one of those guys that likes to do a lot of different things. Different things pique my interest, and I go after them. You know, I thought all along from a very early age that I wanted to be in the space program, and I got very lucky, very blessed to. I've gotten a job right out of college at NASA at Kennedy Space Center. What ended up happening was, you know, after a few years, crawling around the space shuttles lost its luster, and it's, at the end of the day, it became, you know, sort of almost like another government job. It was really kind of bad to say because NASA isn't a typical government agency, but it did sort of become that.
Right.
And I was looking for something different to do, and it was about the time that this thing called the Internet was really taking off. So we ended up starting a company with another NASA engineer, and, you know, one thing led to another, and we ended up leaving NASA and selling to a company that was in payments, and they needed web technology, and we provided it. So that got me down the payments route, and it just sort of took off from there.
Okay, so to bring it back to the mobile payment thing, I get a phone call the other day from American Express. Touche, good job, hat tip to American Express, because the phone call was, are you in Gardena, California, in a whatever it was department store about to buy $380 worth of clothing? I said, no, I'm not. I'm 1,000 miles away from there. And they said, do you have your credit card? I pulled my wallet out. I pulled it. Yes, I do. There was a person standing there with my credit card, which wasn't my credit card, who had done evidently exactly what you just said with my information. So luckily, the card was declined, and they immediately sent me a brand new credit card. I want you to know, Darren, that's the second time that's happened in the last 6 months. So this kind of fraud is happening all the time, and identity theft all the time. So what do I do in that case when it comes to those little swipe things? I mean, what do we do? What are you guys doing about it?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate because it is a problem. And the card companies are getting better. You know, they got the chip cards that have come out. The unfortunate thing about the chip cards is if you've used them, you know, you stick them in the little slot, you got to sit there and wait for like 20 seconds for the thing to raise.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, poor me. Right? I am happy to wait that 20 seconds. Believe me. No, if that's what it takes, I'm going through the airport waiting an hour to get now through the security. 20 seconds, I'll do that. But anyway, go ahead.
Right. So that's going to help with this stuff because that actually goes through and there's encryption actually on the card. But any place where they're still swiping a card, you know, is an opportunity for that to be, for that card number to be stolen. And by the way, you're not alone. I've gone through probably 5 cards in the last year and a half.
Wow.
I've even gotten to the point where my credit card company is really locked down on my account. So if anywhere I go that's outside the country, they're just stopped and they're giving me a call. I've got to, arrange everything ahead of time. But it's been a real problem for these card companies.
So I guess having the chip card and having to wait an extra 15 or 20 seconds is part of the new way. So everybody pull your wallets out, pull your, credit cards out and look how many do you have with chips. Those are the safe ones. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they're only safe if you're using them in a device that accepts the chip because those can still be swiped just like any other card.
Oh, so should I not? Are you suggesting perhaps not to just hand my credit card to anybody, carry some cash for buying the stuff at the grower's market or whatever? That's what it boils down to.
As a person in the card industry, I hate to say to do that. I think it's really, if the card's being swiped in front of you, chances are you're pretty safe. It's when the card is taken away, like in a restaurant. That's a traditional place where this happens.
Okay.
You don't know what's happening to it when it's outside your sight. By and large, the vast majority of transactions are safe, but, all it takes is getting it on one list and it's getting used somewhere. The good news is you're protected. The Visa and MasterCard regulations protect you from having to pay for that. The banks have to cover your losses. It's just kind of a pain because, your card's probably in 20 different online places and you got to redo it all. And for me, my big thing is going through the toll booth. I forget to change that, and all of a sudden I'm getting a $30 ticket.
You're right. Well, that, and fortunately, and I need to send this to American Express. Even my Starbucks card, they continue to honor the card that is from the first card, because I'm on my third card now. I put the first card in there, of which then they replaced it with another one, and now another one. So we're on card number 3, and I haven't updated it, but they keep honoring that payment from Starbucks and some of these other ones. So my feeling is there's credit card companies out there that are really working hard for us consumers, and American Express seems to be one of them. Do you have any advice on that? Which card companies are doing a better job than the other, than obviously my experience?
Well, they're all really working at it. American Express traditionally has been, the company that really looks after its customers. It's also one that's accepted in fewer locations, though. So, there's sort of a trade-off in that.
Well, I will say that I have not experienced anything that was, that I couldn't get over with American Express every so often. I'm going to say one time in 50, they don't take American Express. And I have a feeling that that's, going to be changing as more people like me talk on 50 radio stations about what a good job they're doing. I'm the end user, and I'm spending a lot of money because of that. Now, when we come back, I want to talk about you a little more, the first novel that you wrote, and more about outer space right here on Popular Science Radio. Stay with us.
There may have never been a Roaring Twenties if not for John and Horace Dodge. And that roar has only gotten louder over time, thanks to the Dodge Challenger and Charger RT Scat Pack Editions. 6.4-liter Hemi V8, 485 horsepower, and 475 pound-feet of torque. That's some thunder. And if you listen closely, you can almost hear the Dodge brothers. It sounds like they're still having a pretty good time. Dodge, their spirit lives on. Dodge and Hemi are registered trademarks of FCA US LLC.
Well, you're listening to Popular Science Radio. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Dodge, Born Dodge. I happen to have a new 2016 Viper. Oh, my gosh. I got a one-of-one ACR, which is an American Club Racer. It's got the big Extreme Aero package on. I bought, my middle-aged crazy car. And you know what? It is a rocket ship. How do you like that? That's how I'm bridging the story coming next now from Darren Beyer, who is a former NASA space shuttle engineer and author of his first novel, Casimir Bridge. Now, my dad is a theoretical physicist, and I've heard him talk about the Casimir effect because he's always talking about his theories of life and space and time wind and all these things. And I'm like, Dad, please, you're hurting my head. But your whole thing, Darren, is that you're the guy that lived the life at, you know, with NASA, working 10 years at the Kennedy Space Center, working on all the different space shuttles and things like that. But it boils down to why space exploration is necessary in fostering technical innovation. It's funny how you went on in your career to become an entrepreneur and work in that world of mobile technology and payments. It was perfect because, you know, we've been talking about fraud and identity theft and everything, but we'll lighten it up a little bit now and talk about your first novel, Casimir Bridge. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so, you know, I started writing the book about 10 years ago, and it was really a way for me to express some frustrations with things that were going on in the world, and it just sort of began to take on its own life. I could have written it in any setting, but they say write what you know, and I know a lot about space travel and space exploration, and so it just made sense for me to put it into a science fiction setting. I bring a lot of realism into the book. I spend an inordinate amount of time making sure the science is correct. You know, nothing, makes me drop a book or want to walk out of a movie more than when the science is incorrect. I think it's almost a duty of writers, whether they're film writers or novelists, to, you know, make sure that the science is correct so that people are actually learning something when they read without even thinking they're learning things. I really strove to get that in, you know, get that right in the book.
Well, how did you do that? I mean, okay, so you're an expert in what is space shuttle experiment engineer is what it says here. But so did you work with friends, other scientists, physics? How did you do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And some of it was tough. Some of it was easy. There's a nuclear terror component to the book, which is something that's, you know, been in the news lately. One of the things is you want to learn where a nuclear device came from, where the nuclear material came from. And so there's nuclear forensics associated with that. Mm. I wanted to make sure that I got the science right on that because it's a pretty key part of the book. And so I started reaching out to nuclear forensics experts and just nuclear physicists in general around the country, and I couldn't get a response. As you can imagine, when somebody you don't know, you know, calls you up or sends you an email and says, hey, I want to learn about, you know, nuclear forensics and nuclear weapons, people are a little bit loath to talk to you. But I finally, you know, was able to get a hold of somebody at the Lawrence Livermore Lab and set up a meeting with them. And so I had three nuclear forensics experts. And then a guy who was sort of like I think he was making sure that we weren't saying anything that shouldn't have been said, who was along just for the ride. But we had a great conversation. I learned a lot and was able to incorporate that stuff into the book. So it was great. And then I had another one where, you know, I wrote an email to a particle physicist at the Fermi Lab, which creates antimatter. And it was for, you know, understanding how antimatter works and how it's created and does it make sense to use. He wrote me back in 5 minutes, and I had a call with him the next day. So I was reaching out to the experts in the field to make sure that I got the science.
So the book then is what? Facts about space, space travel, technology. Give me 1 minute on that. I'll take a break, and we'll come back and chat some more.
Yeah, so it's really I really focus on being more of a thriller than a science fiction book, and it really focuses on one character in particular, but it's really about how corporate greed can sort of take over and what are the effects of allowing companies to have too much power, and it focuses on one company that's off of Earth, another company that's on Earth who wants what the first one has, and so it's all about, you know, trying to get it through doing bad things, and the main character sort of in the middle of it trying to, figure out what's going on.
So did you like Matt Damon's movie about Mars? Did you think that was pretty well done?
Yeah, you know, there is only, I really look at for technical flaws in movies. It's just kind of one of my things.
Yeah.
The Martian, I read the book before I saw the movie, was an excellent book. I was riveted all the way through it. I read it. I was up until probably 3 a.m. every night reading it until I got it done. And the movie did it justice. And the story and the movie were very technically correct. I mean, really excellent. One issue was...
All right, hold on. Let me take a break. We're talking with Darren Beyer, his first novel, Casimir Bridge. And I see a series and maybe a movie coming out of this. We'll be right back and talk some more about The Martian and technology and space travel right here on Popular Science Radio.
That was sweet as molasses. Now what really knocked me out was the cheap sunglasses.
Calling all autocross enthusiasts. Come out to the Good Guys 2nd North Carolina Nationals on April 15th through the 17th at the North Carolina State Fairgrounds. On Friday and Sunday, have your chance to ride autocross for kids to benefit the Austin Hatcher Foundation for Pediatric Cancer, empowering the children and their families faced with pediatric cancer. To learn more, visit hatcherfoundation.org/autocross. Listening to Popular Science Radio, I'm Alan Taylor, and if you own a car, you should have a Haynes Automotive Repair Manual in your garage or in the car. They're the information resource and the DIY enthusiast worldwide leader of automotive and repair information for motorcycles and autos both for over 50 years. HAYNES.com, and they also have them with videos now where you can watch videos. Anyway, our guest right now, Darren Beyer, he is a former NASA space shuttle engineer and author of Casimir Bridge, part of a series called the Angazi series. Evidently, there's more to come is what I'm seeing from this, right, Darren?
Yeah, I've got two more books teed up, and then I've actually got ideas for another series beyond that that I'm really looking forward to writing.
So we were talking about The Martian just a little bit, which I loved the movie. It just seems so well done and real and believable. And I've talked to some other folks from NASA and engineers and people that are, you know, kind of tech geeks. And you, I notice here, you know, your whole the premise here is to make sure that, you know, you want to do things right, obviously working with physicists and forensics experts and all that when you're writing this book called, again, Casimir Bridge. And you guys can find it, by the way, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and he has a website. We'll give it at the end. But talk about maybe a little bit of the tech that you featured, that because if you were critical to the movie The Martian, then you got to figure there's going to be a lot of people critical to your someday movie, but even if nothing else, your book right now that's available. And it just came out in February and really launched into the market just you know, last month. So you guys, again, it's called Casimir Bridge. And but talk about some of the tech that's featured.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting in writing a book is, and going back to my payments career, I was in product and sort of technical product development. You know, you got to figure out, you know, you look at a product from all sides, right? You have to look at, you know, how consumers are going to absorb it. You got to make sure it's going to work correctly and it just overall makes sense. And writing a book was fundamentally no different. You know, I had to go in and I had a basic premise that I wanted to draw on, and I started, you know, putting filling in the gaps around it. And every time I fill in a gap, that becomes in a sense, you know, in essence, another product. And I have to look at all the things around that. And so by doing that one after another, I sort of weave this puzzle, you know, and working in the technology was a key piece of it. And, you know, there's technologies, that I used, you know, from my time with NASA and working on the space shuttles. So that kind of came naturally, but there are other ones that aren't available yet. You know, part of science fiction is interstellar travel. So how does that happen? Right. And I really had to come up with plausible theories around that and using wormholes to travel between star systems and how does it work and what are the limitations with it. So one of the things I came up with was there's a new element. I call it Hyperion because it was found on Saturn's moon of Hyperion. And it's what enables interstellar travel. Mm. And it's sort of the oil of tomorrow. It's in limited supply. It's highly in high demand. Obviously,
and it's real. It's real. We're talking about something that's not science fiction. It actually is real.
No, it's not actually. This is a science fiction.
Okay,
element.
I was going to say you already fooled me. You fooled me there, right? Because of NASA.
Yeah, I want to make sure. I want to make sure people realize it's not an actual real element. And so, you know, and what I had done, I had to figure out, like, what does it do to create a wormhole? Well, wormholes, there's one theory that says wormholes are present all the time, but they just collapse on themselves very quickly. So to be able to go through one, you've got to stop it from collapsing. So this is just, the kind of, again, an example of the puzzle work I did to kind of get from point A to point B. And so, you know, I'd say, well, this element must be, you know, have to be able to push the walls of the wormhole out to keep it open long enough for a ship to traverse it. Well, so if it does that, it's got some sort of gravitational effect that's not normal. So it's got some sort of anti-gravity effect. And so I ended up being able to work in, you know, some anti-gravity technologies based on the element. Everything from pushing a bullet down a barrel to, what I call skimmers that can hover, to anti-gravity actually on ships where they put these, you know, plates in the ceiling that actually push you down to the floor. So
right.
I had to come up with a whole series of technologies around this one element. And it was, just this sort of puzzle piece that, I put one together after another to come up with the overall feat.
Well, I love it. It sounds like a fun novel, and a few folks out there are into science fiction novels. Here we have a NASA space shuttle engineer has written, and it's there's going to be a series, and it's called The Casimir Bridge, and it's part of the Angazi series. And I asked him during the commercial break, what is Angazi? And he says it's a Zulu word for I don't know, which I like that. It just sounds like a lot of fun. You can find it at, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and also his website, which is Tech22, TEK22.com. Author Darren Beyer and space shuttle engineer and expert on mobile technology and payments. It all worked out for me today, Darren. Thank you very much.
Well, that's great. And just to put in one more shameless plug, if I could, is my company that we just started up that works in mobile payments is called Viatap, and it's at viatap.com.
Very good. Very good. Darren Beyer, that is it for this week on Popular Science Radio. We'll see you next week. Same time, same channel. See you then. Small business comes in all shapes and sizes. Your financing options should, too. Benetrends Financial offers a full suite of small business and franchise funding options to help entrepreneurs like you get the best funding options possible, quickly, safely, and economically, so you can finally purchase the business of your dreams. Sign up for a free funding consultation today, and we'll design a customized funding plan for you. Visit Benetrends.com. That's Benetrends.com to find out more. Benetrends.